Famous Last Words by Gillian McAllister is a riveting psychological thriller that has taken the literary world by storm. This New York Times bestseller has captivated readers with its intricate exploration of truth, deception, and the lengths we go to protect those we love. The novel has garnered praise from Reese Witherspoon, who featured it in her book club, calling it a masterclass in suspense that keeps you guessing until the very last page. McAllister, a former lawyer turned full-time author, brings her legal expertise to this taut narrative, creating a story that feels both authentic and heart-wrenching. The book's exploration of moral ambiguity in the face of impossible choices has sparked countless book club discussions and social media debates about what readers would do in similar circumstances. Cam's ordinary workday at her London literary agency begins like any other: manuscript reviews, client meetings, and thoughts of returning home to her family. But everything changes when Detective Sergeant Lambert and two uniformed officers stride through the glass doors of her office with news that defies comprehension. Her husband, Luke, is holding three people hostage in a dilapidated warehouse in Bermondsey. The revelation feels particularly cruel given the intimate domesticity she'd shared with Luke just 12 hours earlier, sitting on their worn leather sofa, sharing Jaffa cakes while he lovingly insisted she take more evenings off from caring for their 8-month-old daughter, Anna. The evidence presented is devastating in its clarity. CCTV footage from multiple angles shows a man whose identity seems irrefutable. Luke's distinctive yellow-soled Nike trainers, a Christmas gift from Cam, move purposefully across the concrete floor. The childhood bicycle accident scar on his forehead is visible when he turns toward the camera. State-of-the-art facial recognition technology confirms a 98% match, and phone tracking data places him in the vicinity. Three terrified hostages sit bound to wooden chairs, their heads covered with black cotton material, while Luke paces methodically before them, his movements taut with tension. Detective Sergeant Lambert, a woman whose compassionate demeanor barely masks her professional determination, guides Cam into a side office for questioning. Each new detail she reveals feels like another brick in a wall of evidence. Luke's phone had pinged a cell tower near the warehouse at 5:07 that morning before going dark, the same time he'd told Cam he was leaving early for a meeting with clients. The morning kiss goodbye replays in her mind, now tainted with questions and doubt. Through the office's glass walls, Cam watches her colleagues' faces transform from confusion to horror as the situation unfolds. Editorial assistants who'd just hours ago been discussing manuscript deadlines with her now whisper behind raised hands. Her senior position as a respected literary agent, carefully built over a decade, seems to dissolve in seconds. As police officers escort her through the office to a waiting car, her legs shake so violently she can barely walk. Her silk blouse, chosen carefully that morning, clings to her sweat-soaked back. The short walk to the police car becomes a cruel gauntlet. Passing colleagues avert their eyes, while curious onlookers from neighboring businesses openly stare, already recording videos on their phones. In this moment, Cam feels her identity violently shift, from successful professional and devoted new mother to something altogether different, the wife of a hostage taker, a woman who shared her bed with a stranger, a suspect by association whose life will forever be divided into before and after this terrible morning. Niall Thompson, a seasoned hostage negotiator with 15 years of experience, establishes a command center at a nearby Wetherspoon's pub alongside James Maidstone, the Silver Commander. After methodically clearing the establishment of patrons and staff, Niall meticulously sets up his specialized communication equipment, a secure phone line, recording devices, and multiple monitors displaying CCTV feeds. He insists on minimal interference in his workspace, knowing from experience that too many voices can complicate negotiations. For Niall, the essence of negotiation lies in the pure connection between himself and the subject, just him, the kidnapper, and a phone line bridging their worlds. While reviewing Luc Deschamps' background, Niall maintains his trademark professional detachment, a skill honed through countless high-stakes situations. Luc's profile is unusual: no criminal record, stable employment history, and a seemingly normal life until today. What catches Niall's attention is the timing. Luc has a 3-month-old baby at home, and Niall's experience with similar cases suggests possible male postnatal depression, a condition often overlooked but potentially devastating in its consequences. The CCTV footage provides crucial behavioral insights. Luke's handling of the Beretta pistol shows familiarity with firearms, yet his movements lack the calculated precision typical of experienced criminals. Among the hostages, Isabella Lewis's presence adds a complicated dimension. Her position as the wife of police officer George Lewis, whose family owns the warehouse, suggests this situation might be more personal than initially apparent. Niall observes the stark contrast in body language. The hostages remain frozen in terror, while Luc paces with frenetic energy, his movements betraying what Niall recognizes as fear rather than dominance. When technical issues cause a loss of surveillance, Maidstone's questioning becomes more urgent. Niall carefully chooses his words, describing Luc as agitated and emphasizing his scared face, details that suggest someone acting out of desperation rather than malice. Drawing on his extensive experience, Niall pushes for 2 immediate actions: establishing direct communication and bringing Luke's wife to the scene. While Maidstone reluctantly agrees, he sets conditions. Successful initial dialogue must precede any family involvement. This cautious approach frustrates Niall, who knows that time is both an ally and enemy in such situations. The negotiator's insistence on seeing Luke's body language before making any major decisions stems from years of reading subtle cues that often predict outcomes. When Maidstone suggests armed intervention after spotting Luc aiming his weapon, Niall counters with hard-earned wisdom. Aiming doesn't mean shooting, a distinction that could mean the difference between life and death. Throughout these tense moments, Niall carries the immense weight of his responsibility. Each word he chooses, each strategic decision he makes, ripples through the lives of everyone involved. This burden of negotiation, where success means lives saved and failure means lives lost, isn't just about today's crisis. It's a weight that accumulates over a career, shaping not just professional identity, but the very essence of who these negotiators become, leaving indelible marks on their psyche long after the immediate danger has passed. As police officers methodically search through Cam's Putney home, Detective Lambert, a sharp-eyed woman in her 40s, questions her about Luke's recent behavior patterns. The detective produces a stack of receipts revealing Luc had purchased fuel twice in 2 days during spring, highly unusual for their London lifestyle, where they rely primarily on public transport and rarely drive their seldom-used Volkswagen. Cam deliberately lies about noticing anything suspicious, though her mind races to recent oddities. She vividly recalls finding Luc in their kitchen a month ago, his shoulder shaking as he stood over the counter. When she touched his arm, he quickly wiped his eyes and claimed it was just from chopping onions, though she now remembers seeing no onions or cutting board. Lambert informs Cam they need her at the scene to attempt communication with Luc, while PC Smith and a forensic team continue their meticulous search of their Victorian Terrace house. The detective's tone shifts when discussing possible motivations, gentler, almost sympathetic. Cam adamantly insists Luc must be acting under duress or experiencing some kind of mental health crisis. She describes a peculiar burglary 6 weeks ago where nothing was taken despite valuable artwork and electronics being readily accessible. Even her grandmother's antique silver remained untouched in its display cabinet. Lambert officially records their conversation as interview with wife of suspect on her department-issued recorder, the red light blinking steadily as she questions Cam about her last interaction with Luc. Cam hesitates before admitting he had left before she woke that morning, unusual for him, leaving only a hastily scrawled note saying, "Sorry, early meeting, don't wait up." The police have now bagged this seemingly innocent note as evidence. The investigation takes an even more disturbing turn when Smith presents Cam with data recovered from Luke's meticulously wiped laptop. His digital footprint reveals a troubled mind. Repeated Uber Eats orders to unfamiliar addresses, Spotify searches for anxiety meditation podcasts, and an extensive Safari history showing repeated searches about meditation techniques, concentration enhancement, and, most worryingly, stress-induced memory loss. When Smith inquires about a saved Rightmove property listing in Lewisham, a modest three-bedroom semi-detached house, Cam fabricates another lie, claiming they'd considered it as an investment but decided against it. Privately, she makes a mental note to investigate this house herself, adding it to her growing list of mysteries. The most shocking revelation comes when Lambert calmly explains that despite Cam distinctly remembering Luke calling the police about their burglary, she'd even heard him describing the supposed break-in, no police record exists of any such report, and phone records confirm no call was ever made from their landline or Luke's mobile that day. As these deceptions accumulate like layers of sediment, Cam finds herself questioning everything she thought she knew about her husband of 8 years, while still desperately clinging to her deep-seated belief in his fundamental goodness and their shared life together. After multiple failed attempts to establish communication with Luke, Niall finally receives a response. Luke asks him to deliver a message to Cam that he loves her and Polly. Despite this breakthrough, Luke immediately falls silent again, refusing further engagement. This brief message carries ominous weight, potentially signaling a final goodbye before violence. Back at the command post, Maidstone argues they must intervene immediately under Article 2 of the European Convention on Human Rights, interpreting Luke's message as preparation for something terrible. Niall strongly disagrees, believing Luke's hesitation and emotional state indicate he doesn't truly want to harm anyone. Their debate represents the classic tension between action and patience in crisis situations, a split-second decision that could cost lives either way. When Cam arrives at the scene, she meets Niall, who questions her about Luke's ghostwriting work and an unexplained trip on April 21st when Luke turned off his location data. Despite recent signs of stress in her husband, Cam continues to protect him, claiming Luke doesn't get stressed as they prepare to call the warehouse. The call is answered not by Luke, but by Isabella Louise. Through a series of taps, Isabella confirms her identity and that Luke is nearby. The situation deteriorates rapidly when George Louise breaks free from restraining officers, shouting that they're going to fucking kill the hostage taker. Words Luke hears through the phone. Almost immediately, the warehouse door opens and Isabella emerges alone, with a black bag over her head and hands tied behind her back. She explains that Luke released her because she was accidentally caught up in the situation as a building owner. Just as hope flickers that progress has been made, two gunshots shatter the air, shots that will forever change the lives of everyone involved and end Niall's career. In the aftermath, Cam waits on the roadside with two police officers, her mind flooding with memories of Luke that are suddenly interrupted by those fatal gunshots. Despite everything she now knows about Luke's actions, she finds herself hoping against her own moral code that he wasn't shot, that he somehow got away. 7 years after the siege, Cam struggles to move forward with her life, trapped in a liminal space between grief and hope. She's finally begun the lengthy legal process to have Luke officially declared dead, a necessary step to sell their Victorian townhouse in Kentish Town, which has become both a sanctuary and a prison of memories. Though she's going through the motions of moving on, she secretly maintains a detailed folder of possible Luke sightings and unexplained incidents that fuel her belief he might still be alive. Her daughter Polly, now 8 years old and bearing an uncanny resemblance to Luke, grows up surrounded by photographs of a father she's never known, asking increasingly difficult questions about his disappearance. When Cam receives a mysterious text with precise coordinates and a time, 9:30 p.m., her hands shake so violently she nearly drops her phone. She fabricates an elaborate story about Polly having a stomach bug, arranging for her mother to babysit while she rushes across London, her heart pounding with equal measures of hope and dread. The coordinates lead her through the winding streets of Islington to a narrow alleyway between two Georgian buildings and into a secluded courtyard surrounded by ivy-covered walls. As twilight deepens into darkness, Cam finds herself remembering the early days with Luke, their first meeting at a literary festival where she was representing other authors, his manuscript about urban exploration landing on her desk 6 months later. She recalls their gradual transition from professional meetings over coffee to lingering dinners, how his intensity and passion for uncovering hidden spaces matched her own drive for discovering new literary voices. By 9:40, the courtyard remains empty except for shadows and scattered leaves. Cam leaves, her disappointment curdling into familiar anger. On the underground journey home, she attempts to lose herself in a promising new manuscript, but can't shake the prickling sensation of being watched, though each time she looks up, she sees only the usual late-night commuters avoiding eye contact. Meanwhile, Niall has established his own surveillance operation on Cam's house, convinced that his personal investment and years of experience make him more likely to spot crucial details than the rotating shifts of junior officers. He's mapped every possible approach to the house, memorized the patterns of neighbors, and noted every deviation from routine. After maintaining his position for 2 hours in the gathering dusk, he spots a tall figure with Luke's characteristic gait in an alley opposite Cam's house. The man vanishes during Niall's pursuit through the maze-like streets, leaving only questions and frustration. At an official briefing the following morning, Niall learns that the Met plans to terminate surveillance on Cam within a month, citing budget constraints and lack of new leads. The team believes she's either genuinely ignorant of Luke's whereabouts or an exceptionally skilled actor. Refusing to accept this bureaucratic surrender, Niall purchases a burner phone from a corner shop in Hackney, planning to contact Luke directly. A risky move that could end his career, but might finally break the case open. This parallel investigation illuminates the siege's enduring impact on both Cam and Niall. She remains suspended between mourning and searching, while he's haunted by what he perceives as the greatest failure of his career. Both are trapped in orbits around an absent center, seeking answers that seem to recede further with each passing year. Cam's investigation takes a significant turn when she learns that Luke had attended Alexander Hale's funeral on June 16th, the same day he canceled a meeting with an editor. Further research reveals that Alexander and another teenager, James Lancaster, were murdered together in East London, their bodies found on April 21, the same date Luke turned off his location data. Alexander died from a catastrophic head injury, while James had a bullet wound to his temple. Their killer was never found. The connection between these murders and Luke becomes increasingly clear, especially when Cam is approached by a mysterious woman named Madison Smith, who claims to be the wife of one of Luke's hostages. Madison appears fearful, suggesting they meet at Shadwell Station, somewhere Cam doesn't regularly go, implying Cam is being followed. When Madison doesn't show for their meeting, Cam visits St. George in the East Church, where Alexander Hale is buried, then tracks down the Hale's apartment to continue her investigation. Days later, Cam is horrified to discover that Madison has been murdered on her doorstep. Security footage shows a masked assailant, but Cam doesn't think it's Luke based on the walk. She debates whether to tell police about Madison's connection to the hostage, frightened by the woman's murder so soon after their meeting. Meanwhile, Niall makes a breakthrough discovery on the dark web. Messages between Luke and a criminal named Harry Grace reveal that Luke had contacted Harry seeking a gun for protection, believing someone wanted to murder him. Luke mentioned being summoned to meet two men at a warehouse in Bermondsey, fearing they would come to his house if he refused. The messages show Luke arrived at the warehouse unarmed, observed from outside as Harry advised, then went in and managed to take the gun from his would-be killers. This revelation changes everything. The hostages were actually contract killers sent to murder Luke. When Niall meets Cam at the Inner Temple, he reveals his shocking discovery. Luke was defending himself against contract killers. This confirmation of Luke's fundamental goodness brings Cam overwhelming relief. Her husband was a victim who knew someone wanted him dead but told no one. They both recognize the dangerous implication. Whoever wanted Luke dead remains at large and might want Cam dead too. As the truth emerges piece by piece, Niall discovers that George Lewis deleted entries for both hostages, Andrew Smith and Pete Arbuthnot, from the police database on June 21, 2017, as well as temporarily removing the Alexander Hale and James Lancaster murder records. This manipulation of official records points to a conspiracy involving the police themselves. The final piece falls into place when Niall discovers that George Lewis and Janet Hale are siblings. This family connection explains everything. The Hales, whose child Alexander was killed, had a vendetta against Luke, and the Lewises arranged his murder. But why did they want Luke dead? The answer comes when Cam realizes an anonymous manuscript she's been reading is actually from Luke himself. The book reveals that Luke had witnessed a shooting between youths from rival families and intervened, accidentally causing one youth, Alexander Hale, to hit his head fatally on a bollard. Fearing no one would believe his story, Luke fled but was spotted by one victim's father. Later, he foolishly visited the grave and was recognized. The criminal families then lured him to the warehouse where the siege occurred. In a shocking twist, Cam discovers that Charlie, a man she's been dating, is actually working for the Lewises as an informant. After finding a gun Luke had hidden in their garden, Cam confronts Charlie at gunpoint. He confesses they discovered Luke was alive when he returned to their house one night, and they've been monitoring her since she looked into selling the property. In a moment of rage, Cam shoots Charlie in the thigh and flees. Cam finally reunites with Luke in his hideout. For 7 years, he had lived in hiding, watching Cam from afar, working cash jobs and researching his enemies online. He reveals he wrote the book as his last words to her when he feared she was moving on, hoping she'd find him through the clues. Their emotional reunion culminates with Luke asking about Polly, their daughter who unknowingly witnessed everything as a baby. 7 years after the second shooting, Niall works as a hostage negotiation trainer in Colombia with his wife Viv by his side. He reflects on the events after the siege, when Luke had actually been hiding elsewhere, not in the lighthouse where Niall confronted the Lewises. Cam and Luke had lied for Niall, saying they'd witnessed his shooting was necessary. Though Niall avoided charges, he lost his job for withholding information and acting alone. The Hales went to prison, and Niall has found a new purpose teaching negotiation skills with Viv, having learned to put her first before work. Meanwhile, Cam lives with Luke and their daughter Polly, who's nearly 15. Luke wrote a memoir called Famous Last Words just for Cam, replacing his infamous note the papers discovered. Though Luke has changed, becoming more serious with a darker humor, they've rebuilt their life together. Polly was tentative with Luke for years, only calling him dad when she was 11, and still favors Cam. Cam's sister Libby now has a 3-year-old son, Bobby, finding her own happiness after years of struggling with infertility. As they prepare to leave for Polly's musical theater performance, Cam reflects on how their home is whole again, no longer divided into his and hers halves, and they're no longer afraid to sleep by the patio doors. This hard-won peace represents the culmination of years of suffering, secrets, and survival. A family fractured by violence, but ultimately healed by truth and time. In this powerful conclusion, McAllister reminds us that even the most devastating circumstances can eventually lead to healing, though the scars remain. The characters have all been transformed by their experiences. Some finding redemption, others justice, and all of them a new understanding of what it means to protect the ones they love, even at tremendous cost.